This is SB Nation Radio, and you're listening to Game Night with Matt Perrault.
It is Game Night, SB Nation Radio, here on a Monday into a Tuesday. Let's talk some Raiders football. This is a team that, well, look, I think they're the second-best team in the AFC. I think they're off to a really good start. They're 2-0. They just took apart the New York Jets. Levi Damian, editor-in-chief for silverandblackpride.com, the SB Nation site covering the Raiders, joining us. Levi, Matt Perrault, good evening. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be here.
All right. So everyone wants to talk about the offense, but I want to start with the defense. And I want to talk about Gary and Conley a little bit, Ohio State cornerback, who slipped to 24 because of the fact that he had, obviously, an accusation that was proved to be not true. How has he looked so far, and how big of a get could he turn out to be for this defense for the Raiders?
He could prove to be quite a get. I mean, if you looked at what his trajectory as far as draft placement was before the allegations came out, he was looked at as potentially a top 10 pick. I mean, and with the quarterbacks throwing to his receiver, the most astounding statistic that of him was that they had a passer rating of 14 throwing to his receiver. It was insane. And as far as what we've seen so far, we haven't seen a lot simply because he was out all of camp and all of preseason. So the time when it would really matter the most, when you really get a good judgment on what he looks like, he wasn't there. So all you can base it on basically is college. But you can also base it on what you saw the other night against the Jets. Not exactly the pinnacle of teams you're judging anybody's talent against, but he comes out there in his first game after having missed as much time as he has, and he gives up one catch, has a pass defended, and despite playing most of the game, filling in, the TJ Carey is the one who filled in for Sean Smith, but Conley came in there filling in the nickel position. And he looked great. One thing that really stands out to me is talking to Khalil Mack after the game. Mack said he was walking down the hallway the other day pretty late, and he noticed there was somebody in the film room still, like after everybody else was already done, and it was Gary and Conley. And he said, I knew at that moment that he was going to have a good game.
Interesting. That's good to hear. All right, let's go to the offense. So they've done obviously a great job here. 45-20 the win over the Jets, 26-16 the win over the Titans. They're 2-0 to start. But are there any concerns about Amari Cooper and the slow start to his season? Because Michael Crabtree gets 3 touchdown tosses. You know, there was one sequence in the Titans game in which we saw Amari Cooper drop 3 straight passes in the end zone. Any concerns in Oakland with what's going on with Cooper?
I mean, I don't know how concerned they are, but I feel like there should be a little bit of concern just based on the fact that if his history tells us anything, is that when he really focuses on improving in a certain area, he's able to do that typically. And the area that he focused on this offseason was his being more aggressive and just fighting for balls and being that red zone target that he wasn't last year for the Raiders. So he wanted Derek Carr. He said specifically what he wanted was for Derek Carr to trust him more, for him to say that even when he doesn't look like he's open, to throw him the ball anyway and trust that he's going to get it. And that has a lot to do with his red zone, what he does in the red zone. And in that first game, he went to him inside the 10-yard line, and he was able to break a tackle, and with a little help from the offensive line and whatnot, was able to fight his way into the end zone. So that was a good start. But then later on, like you said, there was those 3 straight passes. They weren't 3 straight drops on his part, but you could say at least 2 of them he could have had and probably should have had. And then he had another one in the game the other day. So it is a little bit, I would say it should be a little bit concerning. He's supposed to catch those balls. He's supposed to have focused enough on being that guy that he can go to even when he's covered and make those catches. And he just hasn't. I mean, there's a lot of time ahead of us, a lot of games ahead of us for him to find it and catch on. But he would have expected it to happen.
You know, one, I guess to play devil's advocate, you could say that teams are rolling their coverage to take away Amari Cooper. But the numbers for Derek Carr when he throws to Michael Crabtree so far through 2 games are staggering. It's 12 of 13, 92% completion percentage versus 57%. For everybody else that he's targeting outside of Michael Crabtree. Is there I mean, there obviously is a relationship, but is there maybe a 1A, 1B situation happening here where normally it would be Cooper 1A? Instead, it's Michael Crabtree is going to be the primary target.
Well, that's the thing is Michael Crabtree, he and Michael Crabtree were kind of, I mean, Amari Cooper were kind of a 1A, 1B situation. But last year it was Crabtree who was making these drops. He led the team in drops, and you know, some of that you can blame on the fact that he kind of banged up his finger at some point, and that can obviously, if your hands catch it, it's going to bother you. But wow, I'm actually what he's been able to do thus far, like you said, catching all but one pass thrown his way and catching three touchdowns the other day, is just he looks as good as he ever has, and The times which I notice it the most is just showing his savvy. He's just so savvy, especially with that back shoulder. And Derek Carr will throw the ball his way when he's covered by the receiver, knowing that if he throws it to his back shoulder, he's gonna get it. That Crabtree's gonna get it. He's either wherever the ball's gonna be, like he scored a 26-yard touchdown in his last game where he just, like, waited till the perfect moment and just stuck his foot in the ground and came back and got it, and the corner just kept going. Like, he didn't even realize that Crabtree wasn't there anymore. He just kept going, and then Crabtree just walked in. And the other day, what he did is the corner was right on him, blanketed right on him, and it wasn't a comeback type of situation in that back shoulder. It was a, I'm going to throw it to you, your guy's turned around so he can't see the ball coming, and that's how you're going to get it. And what Crabtree did is he just kept going as if the ball wasn't coming, and at the very last instant when the ball was there, turned around and grabbed it. And as a corner, that's just about impossible to cover unless you've already turned your head around. And by the time he throws the ball, it's pretty much too late for that.
Right. Levi Damian, silverandblackpride.com is our guest. So the dancing for Marshawn Lynch, the homecoming for him, he obviously set the tone. He obviously was having a grand old time. Some Jet players, after the game said it was somewhat demoralizing and they were embarrassed and somewhat angered that Marshawn Lynch was shown on the Jumbotron dancing during a blowout victory. But how good is it for Raiders fans to see Marshawn in the silver and black?
Well, first off, I'll say that the guy who they said that, I think of his name is like Jordan Jenkins or something like that.
Uh-huh.
I actually called out the people who quoted him because it was taken out of context, and what he was saying was embarrassing and was not that Marshawn was dancing. It was just how they were beaten so badly, and so that his words got twisted and taken out of context. And he wasn't too happy about that. He called that out on Twitter. So, well, aside, it was yeah. You can look it up on Twitter. He actually was.
No, I believe you. It's just funny because I can see how it was taken either way. But he did say it pissed him off. He said when I saw it happening, it was infuriating. That was embarrassing, losing like that and having Marshawn dance like that. So I guess it's I can see how maybe you take that out of context, but it's sort of. It was worded in a way that you could see, I guess, both ways.
Yeah. I mean, I don't pretend to take any sides in who said what, but I just wanted to point that out that he was pretty upset that he said that's not what he meant, that's not what he said, so on and so forth. So, but anyway, it's really great having Marshawn back. It's when he was, I was a really big proponent of it before it happened. I was very much rooting for it because he's such a character. And he's such a good guy off the field and in Oakland community, and it's just been such a great story, and it's been everything you hoped it would be from a sports writer's perspective, and certainly from the fans' perspective as well. And him that song they were playing when he was dancing was by a local artist, and the name of the song was Oakland. So I mean, there was a lot of levels to that. He was dancing with joy that they had just scored 35 points and they were cruising to a victory, and he was dancing because they were playing a song that represented everything that he was about and the people that he was about, and it was just like a jubilation thing, and the fans were dancing along and everything. It was just really great to see. You just wish the team weren't leaving in a few years, and that wasn't like a doomsday type of situation. You just wish that you could completely celebrate it without that hanging over it.
Yeah. Levi, thank you for the time tonight. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That is Levi Damian Silver and BlackPride.com, editor-in-chief. Yeah, it stinks for Oakland, but for those of us here in Vegas, it's kind of the opposite. We'll get to the college football weekend. We've not touched on the incredible finishes we had on Saturday night. Next.